Hi, Jimmy.
Hello, Angela.
This is Books,
Books Are Good.
Actually. And welcome to the edition in which we're both talking on our cell phones because computers are shit and I hate them super a whole lot.
Small computer works better than bigger computers, surprisingly.
Yeah, surprisingly enough. So, you know, keep writing your fan fiction on your phone because it will never fail you. And your papers also won't fail you. So do that. Okay. So sorry we're a little late. Last weekend birthday celebration I went too hard. And so we're here today. And also this is not an April Fool's episode. I'm going to say that straight up. Not that. We planned something, but then we got lazy and forgot. So you're welcome.
Yeah.
Anyway, we did actually, for realsies read, we completed a book thoroughly.
Yeah, we did. Day and Revolution
by Vladimir Lenin, the OG.
Vladimir Illist Lenin.
Vladimir Illist Lenin. All right. So let's get started. Jimmy, why don't you start us off with your general feelings about this book?
Lenin sure is salty at all these fucking opportunists.
For real.
Like, he is really pissed that people just straight up cannot read properly.
He sounds like every other salty leftist that I sometimes see on the internet. And it's really funny how nothing changes.
I mean, yes, but also, like, unlike every other salty leftist on the internet, he did some shit.
This is true. He did live fucking through it. So, like, that's his excuse. Everyone else, y'all are just imitating.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, pretty easy read. It definitely helps to have been somewhat familiar with some of the people that he mentions and takes shots at. Not all of them, but some of them, for sure. And then it also helped to have listened to a couple hundred hours of the Revolutions podcast, which covered the Paris Commune uprising and then all of the Russian Revolution extremely in-depth. So that was very helpful for reading this, because otherwise it'd just be like, who? What was the Paris Commune? Can you go over that, Lenin? No, you're just going to say we learned these lessons? Okay.
Yeah. I think the only thing I was unfamiliar with was the Paris Commune, but the way that he described kind of how Marx and Engels and some other folks kind of reacted, I got enough of a sense of what was kind of going on. But I should probably go back and kind of look into that as a thing.
Honestly, I feel like Lenin oversells how efficient the commune was at starting to replace the state before it got squashed.
Gotcha.
Like, it was a mess of leftist infighting from the get-go.
Of course. Of course
and
it would be.
A lot of, like, double and triple, like, parliaments and, like, people creating, like deputies of ministries, like, on the fly and, like, a lot of backroom dealing, blah, blah, blah.
Interesting. So, that sounds fun to read about. Just, however, probably very confusing and a lot of names. And that's also what made it probably confusing for people there who are just like, okay, so who? What committee am I on? And who are the people I'm supposed to hate? Who's, mm-hmm. What is going on? Oh, I'm on a secret committee? Okay, well, who's on the secret committee? Because I don't know, no one's talking to me. About.
Like, straight up, like, it legit was like, oh, they're in this, like, room of the hotel and they've closed and locked the doors? Okay, well, we're going to go to this other room in the hotel and hold a separate meeting to establish a separate parliament.
Oh my goodness. That sounds like a poorly planned anime convention where you have like two rival anime conventions in there and people are like trying to share the hotel room And do you just have probably other people just like, hey, I just came here to party? And other people are like, no, you gotta,
oh my God,
you're trying to party, go the fuck over there. We don't want your shit. We're the pure anime stuff over here. We only care about that.
Honestly, so. I want that. I want that anime. I want that anime about the Marxist anime revolutionary convention.
That would be, whew, that would
China,
be a lot.
Get on it.
China, yeah, I was going to say, China should probably get that on that shit. They already did their Marxist, you know, anime or whatever, which yeah. I have not seen. So
I have watched an episode of it. The animation style is a little weird.
Is it CGI, like a 3D type thing? Okay. Depending on the studio, that can look really good or really bad. Most studios are really bad.
It's not great.
Yeah.
I didn't care for it. At least the animation style. I'm sure, like, the actual anime itself, like, the story is probably fine. Just, I couldn't get past the first episode because of that.
Okay, so, animation studio. Jimmy gives you a thumbs down.
Stick to fucking 2D.
Like, you didn't even pass the 3-episode test. The best test for figuring out if you want to watch the show or not. You didn't make it past episode 1. Try again.
Yep.
All right, any other comments about the book itself? We'll go into things about Limit.
Sure. Like we mentioned before we started recording, definitely treads the same ground a few times, which is fine. Because, like, it is intended to be, like, educational material as much as it is, like, it's just educational material. That's all, like, revolutionary propaganda is to educate the masses. So restating the same thing a couple times in slightly different ways is a good way to cement those ideas. So it can be a little like, okay, yeah, you said this already, but... If you've caught on to the idea, you can just be like, okay, next paragraph.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Yeah. Kind of. You know. Overall, easy read. It was nice having him quote certain things. I thought it was funny when he's like, "No, let me quote the entire thing so he can understand what I'm talking about." I thought the shade at the Social Democrats was pretty funny, especially when he's like, "Ah, yes, cats. A lot of the materials out of Germany for Social Democrats sure have a lot of Russian materials." I thought it was really funny that he also, speaking of translations, he was like, yeah, some of these translated books are actually wrong or whatever. So I can't, like, thinking back in my head, like, man, I wonder if some people just read, like, the first edition of shit that was, like, super wrong, or, like, the wording was
absolutely
off. And so they have, like, this idea about what, you know, capital is, and then just, like, you know, then like that's where they based all the entire their shit off of, and then someone comes through like, oh, here's a second edition, and it's like completely different.
Absolutely. So that's a big problem for Gramsci scholars, is you have to learn Italian because there are no good English translations. Same thing for who was the French woman socialist that was big into, obviously, like, women's liberation, women's socialist movement, and also human sexuality. I cannot remember her name right now for some reason.
I don't recall her, but I assume people had to learn French.
Yes, I think there's a good English translation that came out in the past couple years, but it essentially, up until then, you had to learn French to read her works.
Gotcha.
And the majority of her works, even if they, like, existed, only a few were translated into English. Most were just still in French. So if you wanted to study her, you had to learn French.
Gotcha. So I thought that was interesting. I thought Lenin being the kind of a goober about this whole, like, all right, but Marx really said this, and Engels really said this, is... Granted, I know the audience for those parts were really the opportunists that he was raging about, and not really the masses. He was just trying to say, hey, don't fall for their stuff, because they said this other thing, actually, which I think was fine, but I just thought it was kind of funny. He just comes off as a big in that aspect.
He was a big nerd.
Yeah, he was a big nerd. So yeah, and it's only 100 pages. I was kind of bummed that, because he mentioned early on, he's like, oh yeah, so I'm going to talk about the revolution and stuff. I was like, sweet. And then at the end, he's like, actually, I am literally in the middle of it. So like, I can't get to it. So next time.
Yeah.
That was great.
And then there was no next time.
And then, yeah, and then there was no next time. So, you know, he wrote a pretty concise book, even if I have to repeat himself a couple times. However, we'll get into it, but I think there are some, I have some disagreements about a couple of some of his theories. And two, I guess in some cases, when he was talking about Kautsky, I was like, oh, fuck, I'm the opportunist. Oh, no. just the hit, you know, Kautsky, we'll get into that, like what his deal was necessarily and how I kind of get to that a bit more.
Okay. I'm surprised.
Yeah, just some things I was like, ah, fuck, I kind of said that. Or I thought through that a bit more. So,
okay. So maybe not positions you currently hold, but things that you argued or felt at some point.
Okay. Okay. This probably is going to be a shortest section. In terms of familiarity of Lenin's other works or as a person, personally, I think I've only, this is like my first book I've read of his, and two, anything that I've heard of as a person was all historical things and related to Rasputin. So,
I mean, we read October.
And we read October. But that was, yeah. But that was like kind of it. I didn't read anything else about him, and he's written like a pretty big couple tomes like of his writings that weren't like books, but they were just like, I guess, articles or just things that he's written. And that's kind of
dude,
it for me.
Dude was the master of like the 2000 word like shitpost article.
Yes.
I don't know about shitposts, but like he loved to flame.
Yeah, if Lenin was a quote-unquote influencer today, he would definitely be a debate bro, like streamer for sure. And he would do react Andes to every single thing and call everybody a bunch of fucking idiots. That would be
God.
Lenin.
State and Revolution is just a reaction video.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. I love it. So I also read October. As far as his works, this is his first work that I've read. As I mentioned before, I did listen to all 10 seasons of the Revolutions podcast, which had 160 episode season for the Russian Revolution.
Damn, that makes sense, though.
Well, so it starts like at the essentially the beginning of like Russian history.
Yeah.
Okay. And like the first 10 or 20 episodes are just like getting to like the 100 years before the birth of Tsar Nicholas II. And then it goes through each of the czars before Tsar Nicholas II and all of the political and like socioeconomic movements that were going on at the time and religious movements that were going on at the time. Then there's also like a side arc for Rasputin when they finally get there. It does spend like maybe, I feel like Lenin shows up somewhere around like episode 60 initially in like the late 1800s.
Okay.
And then talks about his early life and his older brother that was killed by the Tsar. And then everything going on with the First International, the Second International, him living in exile, and then the 1905 revolution and his response to that. And then the pre-World War I period, and then et cetera, et cetera. So I'm moderately familiar with what he was doing historically, both from the book and then from that podcast. But as far as like a direct biography by someone, I haven't read that.
Yeah.
Nor have I watched the anime.
Nor has Jimmy watched the anime, which is the most important part. Okay, so both kind of aren't super familiar with them. And in terms of, people like to joke about Yushiri theory. And part of me, you know, like, haha, yeah. But the other part of me, like, this is only 100 pages. So, well, this specifically. I don't know. There are, I think on the versobooks.org, there are his writings all. There's like a tomb of them, or tome, sorry, not tomb. There is a tomb of him, I think. But there is a tome of that, and it's like, it's a good 400 pages. So I don't know. I guess at the end of the day, if you're like, I want to read State and Revolution, you can do it because it's very tiny and
it's very accessible. Yeah.
Yeah, and not too many name droppings, but at least if this, the same names show up. So you kind of get a sense of kind of who they are.
And honestly, though, like that tome is still probably like very similar to this, where each section is maybe only 20 or 30 pages.
Yeah.
So like, even though it probably seems inaccessible, it is probably pretty accessible.
Yeah.
As far as like length of each piece goes, who knows, like, is it going to be him shadow boxing against people that you're not hearing the other argument of? Don't know.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. So I guess let's try to summarize Lennon's points here. And I'm going to do a horrible job at this, so like usual.
No worries. I will also do a horrible job.
So essentially, his whole points are, don't listen to these opportunists because they are trying to not go with a revolution. They think that they can change things from the inside by allowing the state to give workers unions and better conditions and things like that. And so we should try to change the state from the inside. Lenin says, no, we need to smash the state. However, he's like, but not smash the state like those anarchists want to do it, which I thought was also an interesting point, but I digress. And then once we, and two, don't become a parliament. Once we smash the state, like, don't do that. Lenin's thoughts were, if we can get everybody to work for the state, essentially, or some type of organism, and everyone's paid the same, and everyone kind of knows what's going on, then we should be able to move from socialism into communism. And it's pretty much, that's a very broad strokes type of thing. His problems with anarchists was like, his problem with anarchists were generally the fact that, I think one, he kind of was like, this is too, like, too much of a utopia type thing. And two, they didn't really want to do something.
So I think the thing that the anarchists didn't want to do was use the state as it existed to, once you wrest control of the state from the capitalist, to use the state to suppress the capitalist, to prevent them from retaking over the state.
Right.
Basically, his argument seems like the anarchists just want to immediately dismantle the state without first suppressing the, like, basically trusting the good nature of existing capitalists to not try and reestablish the state immediately after it's been smashed.
Yeah, okay. Yep, that sounds correct.
Which makes sense to me. At the same time, though, like, I feel like Lenin is also being a bit naive, and I feel like the Russian Revolution played that naivety out pretty clearly, in that, like, I think he is underestimating, and he doesn't, like, say, oh, it'll take, like, 5 years to completely dismantle, like, the bourgeoisie and, like, all of the opportunists and get to the point where we can dissolve the state. But I don't think he would have, like, imagined, oh, the like a lower form of socialist state will exist for 60 years and get nowhere near to the higher form of communism.
Yeah, I think I thought it was interesting actually that he did kind of say, like, as you said, you know, it's going to take a really long time. The fact that he does say that, because it, granted now, because of climate change, things need to be like a bit quicker, but it's like at the same time, yeah, I think people need to think more of a decade spanning, multiple decade spanning type of thing. Like, oh yeah, within a year, we're totally just going to bang that out. Just do a revolution, get everybody reorganized, it's fine. Which is, it is, you know, it's frustrating, but like at the end of the day, you know, it took 400 years for capitalism to be what it is.
Yeah, wow. Absolutely. And I feel like the red-white civil war in Russia post-revolution is the dialectical result of the lower form of communism trying to establish itself.
Right.
The world is not so unconnected at that point, where capitalists aren't able to try and intervene externally and internally. But at the same time, the world was not connected enough that the communists could spread everywhere all at once.
Right.
Since they couldn't immediately nip it in the bud, but they couldn't stop the spread of the reaction, like it's inevitable that even if you seize like the mantle of the state and use it to begin to oppress the capitalists, like you're going to end up in a protracted war.
Sometimes the language, or like the language that's like kind of used here, is very interesting, because there's like, oh yeah, so we have the, well, also another thing that Lenin kind of railed against was, you know, you have Trotsky, who's all like, yeah, so, you know, you have your peasants and they don't fucking know anything, like, as if that was a foregone conclusion. And like, you know, the former bourgeoisie and the petty bourgeoisie, they should just kind of run everything. They're not bad and they like are enlightened, but like, you know, they should have their own council or whatever, just like we had here. So like, I don't understand what the problem is. And then we do a socialism. I think, you know, it's kind of reflected here. My point is that Lenin kind of probably didn't consider that a bunch of people were going to be very interested in what the fuck was going to happen in Russia. You know, considering, I guess maybe that's not his, obviously his focus, but it's just kind of like, people probably weren't going to let you go and do whatever the fuck you want. I mean, even the monarchists were all like, yo, we're going to, you know, fuck your shit up, you know, because we know you killed him. So like our king, and we still want to have our, you know, monarchy here. So I don't know. It's, yeah, I think you're right about there. He was kind of naive about how things were going to kind of go. And
like a communist revolution, if Marx's theory came out in the, Marx and Engels' theory came out in the 1750s and 1760s, entirely possible that like maybe the French Revolution goes, like actually manages to be socialist, just because transportation was so difficult, communication was so difficult. Like even though the world was connected at the time, it was so slow.
Yeah.
But, when the theory came out and when the revolutionary attempts were made, like the amount of infighting and like energy lost just trying to get to the correct like point of action to take against capitalists just allowed capitalism time, and you cannot allow that.
Yeah, and also as you kind of mentioned, you know, the speed of communication, just also the technology of weapons changed too. Like there's so much things happening very quickly that, if it happened at maybe a different time, it could have worked out. But just the fighting has changed. Everybody, you know, used to be like, okay, we're going to go out, you know, with their swords or other bullshit and it's going to be whatever. And now it's just like, oh fuck, I'm seeing my like neighbor, my, from my village, gets fucking slaughtered by like machine gun fire or die from fucking mustard gas. You know, it's just like all of a sudden things that were like, all right, like we can probably do this. And then it's like, oh no, this is awful. I don't know how I can reconcile, you know, how I can keep going, you know. So
if the Russian Tsar Nicholas lived and ruled for another 30 years before the Russian Revolution kicked off, say it kicked off as a part of like World War II.
Yeah.
Which also, like, if Tsar Nicholas was around for World War II, Russia absolutely would have been a part of the Axis.
Oh, yeah, for
the
sure.
Entire time.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Time.
They
would have, not even
they
like,
would have totally, yeah.
Yeah.
They
would have
been like, hey, let's just send our Jews over there. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even. They absolutely would just be like, well, we already have concentration camps essentially for political prisoners. Let's just make all Jews political prisoners.
Yeah.
We're already cool with pogroms. So let's, this Hitler guy's pretty cool. I don't know about him like ruling all of Europe. We want Poland, we want Ukraine, but I think we can come to an agreement.
Yeah, no, sir. Yeah, he definitely would have tried to figure out how to, like, finagle himself out of that. And then, well, let's see, he was also kind of a dumbass. He probably still would have maybe gotten, whomever was more incompetent at that time would have just died. Hitler was also a dumbass. So, like, one of those... You can see Tsar be like, yeah, sure, Hitler, like, you know, we can be buddies. And then, like, Hitler is, like, he sees, like, how shitty all that shit is. He's like, ah, dude, that sucks. You can't get your troops. Like, my troops just can't come over there. It's winter. Like, I don't know. I can't help you there.
Yeah.
So.
But then also, like, at that same time, like, the one, there wouldn't have been, like, an Eastern Front. So, like, Hitler would have been free to go pure through the West.
Yeah.
And Russia wouldn't have pushed on Japan at all. So they would essentially just be like trying to like take over as much of the Pacific before Japan could, probably.
Yeah, possibly. But I don't know if that would have happened because with the Russo-Japanese War that was, you know, 10 years ago, I don't know if he would have been like, oh, now it's my chance to fuck up Japan again, you know?
So at this point, if we're talking like World War II, the Russo-Japanese War would have been like 30 years prior.
That's true.
That could be enough time for them to bury the hatchet, especially if they saw like the like opportunities for land grab.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, we're getting into, like, who knows territory.
Yeah, we're getting into alt history fan fiction here.
Fucking Harry Turtledove, whatever his name is.
I have no clue. I thought you were making a made-up name, so...
No, he's an alt history writer who imagines things like, what if the Confederacy won? Or what if Hitler was on the moon?
More fantastical and interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if the second one's the book, but yeah. He does a bunch of like alt history stuff. Anyway, so getting back to Lenin, maybe a little naive on how effective the proletariat could be at wresting the state from the bourgeoisie and using it to suppress the bourgeoisie. But I think he learned that in time.
Yeah.
Definitely also makes me feel like maybe Trotsky's right. It can only work if it's everywhere all at once.
Yeah. I was thinking that because I was like, oh, Trotsky's revolution everywhere. And I'm kind of like, it's hindsight 2020 at this point, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. once the revolution happened and then things were kind of protracted and the Russian Civil War fucking happened. So then you have all these capitalist interests who are like, hey, I'm gonna back your ass. That's where I'm like, see, that's the problem. Once you have other people like, oh, I'm now interested in backing my guys, then you're fucked. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm sort of agreement with Trotsky in that point. I don't know what other people's problems with him are, so don't at me in space or whatever about it.
You can't at us.
You can't at us. So, you know.
Think your psychic daggers.
So that's my only, like, I guess to me that makes sense, but that's a makes sense, like hindsight 2020 type of thing. And like, mm-hmm. I don't know at the time if they were like, yeah, when we're like doing this fight, well, except probably when they were like getting gunned down, they're like, wait a minute, those weapons look like a bunch of American weapons, or wait a minute, where the fuck did they get all this money to buy shit? That was probably like, fuck, like, all right, well, we gotta, like, we have to win. Otherwise, you know, we know that these other interests are here. So.
So Kautsky.
Kautsky. All right, let me explain why I sort of related to Kautsky's points.
To be clear, listeners, if you're familiar with Russian revolutionary period history, we're not talking about Kerensky. We're talking about Kautsky.
Kautsky, yeah. So essentially how Lenin summarized Kautsky's points were, I mentioned this before, but I want to reiterate. Kautsky's like, no revolution. However, we can change the state from within to have more socialism as a thing. Proletariat are a bunch of dum-dums. So, like, you know, we just give them some bread and make sure that they have 9-to-5 jobs. It's fine.
He's basically Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. And,
no shade on Bernie.
Yeah. But. And I'll fully admit, I have definitely said or pushed back against revolution. So, like, and I do, in a way, you know what, whatever. I'm not going to try to tiptoe around it. I do believe that it would be better to try things from within. However, we've definitely seen several times over that capitalists will appropriate things, so their social tendencies, and then warp them to be not socialist after a point to make them look good for 5 years. You know, they get the 5-year cooldown of being a piece of shit. Or just murder you. So like, yeah, like I've been like at that, like I definitely have thought that or expressed it. And I don't know until we read a more modern book. Because this is like when Lenin wrote this, it was a very specific circumstances that were happening in which essentially the world was kind of collapsing, like in Russia, since like things were like fucked.
Yes.
And now that we're more connected, it's like, I don't know if revolution is the way forward to do things. And should we just try to do more stepwise types of things? However, I don't agree with Kautsky. In the sense of the bourgeoisie knows what they're doing, because that's not true, like, or anything like that. And
yeah, they're all fucking idiots.
Yeah, and like, we have to kind of consider the modern context, like, what is a worker, you know, like, mm-hmm. that kind of falls apart. And like, granted, I know of, like, when that was like written, because it's pretty much for them, it's like peasants, like labor, and then people who have like a shop, like a shoemaker. He may be considered a worker, but not a peasant. And then, mm-hmm. like, the bourgeoisie are not really, well, petty bourgeoisie are owners, but they do make more, they're more white collar. But, like, that doesn't technically, in my opinion, that doesn't work anymore. For
intelligence workers are workers. White collar workers are workers. Yeah. They may not necessarily recognize it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's why I'm like, oh shit, I kind of said some of the same kind of things that he has, except less fucking snobby.
I mean, so. Sure. Like, absolutely. Like, revolution is, like, insanely deadly for the downtrodden. Like,
yeah.
Even back then, and especially now, like, beyond just like fighting against the cops, fighting against like the military, like that's going to be insanely deadly. But then also like the immediate disruption to supply chains is going to be deadly to anyone with diabetes, anyone with an autoimmune disorder, anyone who is physically disabled and not able to, say, fend for themselves and rely on the support of their neighbors when all of the supply chains are disrupted. And then, like, what if their neighbors are then all, like, captured or shot or what have you, detained? Yeah. So, like, whether it's, like, the slow movement of, like, social benefits progress under capitalism through parliamentary, through democratic means, or it's, like, revolutionary disruption, there's going to be suffering.
Yeah.
Yep. Kautsky, am I right?
Kautsky, am I right? Okay, we got two questions from a website called Liberation School. I'll link that in the show notes. The first one is, how do opportunists use Marxism? And can you think of other revolutionaries to whom this happens? Jimmy, you want to take it away?
Well, so opportunists use Marxism in the sense of, like, misusing or misreading or misrepresenting Marxism. So in this, Lenin talks about Bernstein, who is a German social democrat, talks about Kautsky, who is a quote-unquote socialist, but really, like, an opportunist, a social democrat, and Plekhanov, and Panikowyk, but I can't quite remember what Panikowyk's deal was. But Plekhanov, like, is a socialist. He recognizes, like, hey, like, this guy's heart's in the right place, even if he's misreading Marx a bit. But as far as how opportunists use Marxism or misuse Marxism, basically it's to reinforce their goals of not having revolution and using Marx's words or Engels' words to support their goal of slow social change within capitalism. Other revolutionaries whom this happened to, I think Cuba was fine for the most part. Like, I can't really think of any opportunists who were Cuban Marxists who then, like, went and rejected the Cuban state or, like, the Cuban theory.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
Probably on us that we don't know. We need to read more revolutionary or historical texts in those times.
We're bad Marxists, folks.
Yeah.
We're opportunists.
Oh, no, we are opportunists. another way that opportunists use or misuse Marxism is another way for them to actually get money or position themselves to benefit from these ideas. Because I think Lenin mentioned, like, hey, watch out. These guys are trying to, like, swindle you, essentially, out of, you know. Because, I mean,
fundraising, like, drives.
Books and pamphlets and shit, like, and getting talks. They're getting paid for this. So, like, for them to be like, oh, yeah, but I'm the less radical Marxist or whatever, or however they want to position themselves as, that's a way for them to get money. And also, it's a nice way to kind of placate the bourgeoisie, to kind of be like, oh, no, like, I'm actually on your side. I'm not really saying you guys all need to die like the other
their
guy.
Destiny.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So
they're good at arguing with Nazis, but that's about it.
Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of how some I think another way opportunists can see Marxism, use Marxism is a way to kind of grift a little bit. However, in terms of, like, the, go into anything.
Another opportunist, what was the name of the guy who, basically betrayed, Huey Newton?
Oh,
the guy who betrayed Huey Newton and went to Africa.
In his book, shit, I forgot his name is, but yeah, the one who created a cult, or wait, that was like the second
Yes.
guy who created a cult.
I mean, they both created cults, essentially.
Yeah, who just like fled after like he got arrested. Yeah, that's another.
And was like constantly undermining his like decisions or Eldritch Cleaver.
Yes, Cleaver.
Yes, Eldritch Cleaver. Yeah. I would say that's a great example of an opportunist who used revolutionary language to undermine actual revolutionary movements for their own like gain.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, people kind of coming in, yeah, using the language, appropriating the language, and then getting something out of it. A cult following, money sometimes, information to give to the FBI, yada yada yada. So, definitely, it is hard to kind of watch out for. The only thing is, it's like kind of like a, hindsight 2020. Oh wow, they did like kind of shady shit for a while. Or people didn't feel comfortable enough to speak up about those types of things that they were like, seeing people do. So, all right. Another question from Liberation School. How should we understand the transition from capitalism to communism? So, and I hope to be wrong. So, how I interpreted capitalism to communism, and there was one part of it that I was like, interesting, was essentially go from capitalism to socialism. Oh, sorry. Capitalism, revolution, socialism, and then there is a interesting part where there's a dictatorship, and then to communism. And yeah,
Good.
no, I want you to, if I'm incorrect or if I interpret that wrong, I will be fine.
You're not incorrect. I think the order of things is like all the pieces are there, but I think that the position of the dictatorship of the proletariat is wrong.
Okay.
So the revolution happens, and essentially almost immediately, the dictator of the proletariat has to take control of
Right.
all aspects of the means of production. If capitalists have any means of production left over in their possession, that needs to be squashed, which the dictator of the proletariat essentially is the revolutionaries taking control of the apparatuses of the state, democratizing them so that all of the functionaries of the state are represented by members of the proletariat and are accountable immediately to the proletariat, which of course means a shit ton of meetings, a
Right.
shit ton of meetings and votes. But that dictator of the proletariat then has to go forth and completely rout the capitalists and either get them to concede the means of production and join the proletariat and give up all of their trinkets, their baubles, their wealth, or get it taken from them one way or the other.
Right. See, that is where I had like the record scratch moment of it's like, ah, okay, this is where people have a problem. generally. Well, I'm sorry.
Yes.
People, they have a problem with it, and like kind of the misunderstanding of it is kind of that's where the oh, they're gonna take my stuff. That's the my, they're taking my stuff part of the entire thing. And
But the your stuff is not like, oh, you're like camper or your Ford F-150 or your jet ski. The your stuff part of it is like your factory,
yeah.
your office space that you rent out, your coffee shop that you pay other people to do all the work in.
Yeah. And I think also the dictatorship is such a fucking it's just a bad fucking word. Like it is just, it's poison. There's no way about it. It's just bad. So like that's also gonna be immediately like no, I don't want to be part of a dictatorship. I want to be, you know, free in my American freedom, even though technically for some people, they are living in a dictatorship. So it is, I think that's just going to be one of those things that's going to be very hard to reconcile and to like actually be like, okay, this is actually just a step for us to kind of repurpose the materials and the capital that people hoarded. And now we're giving it to our transitionary state before we go into something else. And yes. Yeah, that's...
I would say probably the better way to describe it would be like a democratic commune meets a police state of the proletariat.
Yeah.
Because like all of the decision making will... Like, you'll be able to participate in that to whatever level you want to. If you don't want to go to the meetings for some things, you could go to the meetings for others. Like, work will be required, but I'm sure you would get, like, more of a say in what you're doing. You can sort of think of, like, the dispossessed sort of labor distribution.
Yeah. I always see for me, like the labor distribution, sorry, real quick. It was just always funny. Like, the doctors who just go and work in the fields have no clue how to fuck to work the fields. And thus, like, that's always like the funny to me. It's not funny, but it's just kind of like, right. Like when people try this, they overcorrected and were like, everyone's working the fields. Was like, bro, he's a doctor. Like, let him continue being a doctor. You need doctors, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There will obviously be inefficiencies in these systems, especially in the beginning. But there's already inefficiency.
Oh yeah, like, for sure. It's some people probably shouldn't be working as they do, and by working, it could be just like they shouldn't be a manager because all they do is make sure they watch people's computers to make sure they're working. Like
create spreadsheets out of their like clock in clock out emails,
yeah,
and then compare them to the clock in clock out website. By the way, listener, yes, I do have to send a clock in clock out email and click on a clock in clock out button on a website. Is it dumb? Yes. Were we told 2 years ago that it would go away after a month? Yes.
Ah, of course. The whole this will go away soon. Never believe them.
Never. Yep. I think is the misunderstanding of the order of things, because like the dictatorship, the proletariat, even if it's bad language or unfortunate language, that has to happen before the lower stage of socialism or the lower stage of communism, which is socialism is achieved.
Yeah, I realize I was a silly person and put that in the wrong spot.
Okay.
That was my that's a really hard sell for like everybody. Well, not only just it's a hard sell, it's just the propaganda has been so great that it becomes they take my stuff. Period. Yes.
I'm gonna have to share a toothbrush.
Yeah. And it's just like, no, you know, so well also too, my history of the USSR is very not great. I have heard how people have escaped from, you know, USSR during their time. And for them, a lot of people who weren't like factory owners or anything like that, they were just kind of regular people and they got their shit took. Like, you know, so, or they were Jewish. That was also a problem. They also got their stuff taken. So like, not a good track record. For that, right? Like,
so the other problem is Lenin's naivety regarding human individuals.
Yes.
Unfortunately, people will take opportunities. And we see this with every capitalist war, where people steal shit and they rape and they murder.
Right.
And in a communist or a socialist or dictatorship of the proletariat, whatever you'd like to call it, uprising, unfortunately people are still people,
and
as such people who have unfortunate tendencies or exploitable psychological profiles will take opportunities to behave against the purpose of the revolution.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not like revolution is going to happen and then, like, during it, people are like, time to be not sexist, racist, or, like, massage, you know, be a piece of shit. Because we're, the greater good's happening. Yeah, people who are already selfish pieces of shit are like, this is my time because things are going on. So, yeah, I think there is that too. Just like, oh, no, people will just join together and everyone's going to do the right thing. It's like, dude, not all the time. And
Like, and then also, like, with the nature of, like, warfare and combat as it currently stands, the proletariat is not ready to, like, safely handle AR-15s or whatever it is that we would be appropriated from the U.S. military if that ever was at all possible. So, like, there will probably just be, like, accidental deaths. There will probably be a lot of accidental deaths. There will probably be a fair amount of friendly fire.
Yeah.
And
also, like, if you ever watch anything or talk to any, like, veterans about how they go through boot camp, there is a lot of, like, psychological tricks that they have to do to get you to prepare to kill somebody.
Yeah.
Like, even if you do office work or whatever at the end of the day for the Army, there's still, like, you know, you're protecting the country, whatever, and people who have killed folks, it's not like they fucking like it, but it's like, okay, I those situations, it's like, am I going to die or not? And I'm defending myself, you know, or something like that. And it takes a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, like, if the United States government saw that a large section of the population was actively training itself and arming itself for, like, a functional revolution, I feel like they would bring the revolution to the revolutionary.
Yeah.
And it would not be the first time that the United States government had fired upon its own population using the U.S. military, but it would definitely be the noisiest.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so after the achievement of the lower stage of communism, which is socialism, where the means of production are owned in common by the state, the state is made up of the voluntary efforts of all of the people of a particular nation state, or depending on the size of the revolution of the world, the state will still exist until it begins to wither away. And there's the thing. I do not, once again, if Lenin was alive today, like, I wonder if he would think that was even true anymore. Who's doing garbage pickup?
Yeah, because, like, he even kind of was hesitant to say the withering the state too, because he was just like, well, I don't know if we can really have a bunch of people kind of like doing, like, we're still going to need, like, garbage men, we're still going to need some type of peace officer, like, something to kind of keep things running.
Yeah, because, I mean, not only that, but, like, there will be people who are born, like, 20 or 30 years after the revolution who will be like, maybe I could, like, you know, well, we're trying to make this, like, widget, and, like, I was told to, like, properly get rid of all of these, like, post-production chemicals, and, like, they're in my truck, but I could just back up to this river and dump them in the river.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we have all these agencies to make sure we don't fucking do that type of shit anymore. And it's like, yeah, so who else will do that? Like, we also need scientists to kind of say, or other informed folks to be, or informed folks in a particular area to be like, hey, that's a bad idea, because that will fuck us
up. NIH, CDC, FDA, like, all of these things. Like, as much as, like, the state in many ways will wither away, because, like, great example, the SSA, Medicare, and Medicaid.
Right.
These organizations do not need to exist at the size that they exist, because so much of their size is vetting people and determining who to turn away and how much money someone is worth actually giving, or how much medical care someone is actually worth receiving. And if you just show up at your food co-op, fill up a box with, like, produce and meat and dairy and grains and, like, Cheez-Its and Hot Pockets, and you go to the counter and they're like, okay, yes, all of this has been accounted for. Feel free to walk out without paying anything. And then when you break your arm carrying that home and you go to the hospital and they're like, okay, your arm is broken. We will put a cast on it. We will fix the break. Like, these organizations do not need to be the size that they are.
Right.
Maybe they don't need to exist at all. However, the FDA does. Someone needs to be, like, greater than just the factory determining, like, hey, is this food safe? Are we doing these tests properly? Like, is this medicine safe? Are we doing these tests properly? So.
Yeah, so we're kind of dovetailing into our last question, which is it possible to, like, wither away the state? And we've kind of gone back and forth on this in other books that we read about the state and kind of what does it mean. Something I just thought about, I think sometimes Lenin defines the state also as, like, the violent apparatus of it. And I think, in a way, that I think parts of the state can be withered away, but not the full thing. Because I think it is the way that the world is connected now, you need to have enough of the infrastructure to be able to distribute things. And you can't just be like, okay, certain new state B, you guys have your own thing, but, like, oh, we're butting up against new state A or whatever, or commune A, and there are different laws now. Oh, also, their drinking water is slightly different. And you need to go over there. You need to make sure you, like, boil it and, like, all this other weird shit that could happen, you know? So, like, I think there's pieces that can be withered away, but there's, like, the boring administrative parts that is never going to go away. And it shouldn't.
Honestly, you know, like, the CIA absolutely can wither away.
Right.
The U.S. military and other similar militaries can probably almost completely wither away, if not completely wither away. The FBI can probably mostly wither away. However, the internet is a thing.
Right.
Pedophiles will not go away.
Yeah.
In the communist revolution. Sex crimes will not go away, unfortunately, in the communist revolution. Not because that is not, say, one of its goals, is to further the equality between people and get people to, like, you know, not commit horrible sex crimes. But unfortunately, for one reason or another, people commit sex crimes and people commit other crimes against members of the population that are probably too difficult for the proletariat to, like, police themselves.
Yeah.
Whether it's, like, finding a dark web, like, child porn, like, ring. Like, do you think, like, Joe from the hardware store and Alex from marketing are going to be able to figure that out? I don't know. So, like, even then, I feel like some aspects of the police state, as much as it pains me to admit, may still need to exist. I think the important thing is the level of accountability.
Right.
Needs to be 100%. Like, there can be no, like, what is it called?
Thin blue line?
Thin blue line, prosecutorial immunity, stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, none of that. Like, even like, what is it? Diplomatic immunity. Like, none of
right.
that. Like,
Yeah.
You hit a kid in another country, like you it, with your car, or even with your fist. You have to face like justice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I don't know if the state can truly wither away. And then there's also the argument of like, from the last book we read, what is the state?
Yeah.
Is the state just organizations of human beings to come to agreements on how they want to live and to voluntarily engage and enforce those behaviors, whether it's through like cultural and social norms, or if it's through like clown police every winter?
Right.
If so, like, the state's never going to go away. It's just going to change as we change.
Yeah, I think, I completely agree. It's going to change. And, you know, I don't think it will ever completely go away. It'll definitely change into something, hopefully, which is all I can ask for.
Yeah, better, accountable, engageable.
Yes, for sure.
And not corrupted by capitalists.
Yeah. Okay, so our final question, the most important question of this podcast is, what Sonic character does Lennon embody? We found some Sonic fan art that as Knuckles, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think Lennon's Shadow. Shadow's too edgy.
You know, I don't know. Okay, is Stalin Shadow?
Yeah, I think Stalin's Shadow for sure.
Okay. Is Trotsky Tails?
This is what happens when I found a joke question and then I don't think about it more than I did.
If anybody is Sonic, it's Marx.
Yes, Sonic is Marx. He's the one who started it all.
Yes. So then, like, yeah, I guess Lennon is Knuckles. Like,
okay.
Definitely, like, seems a little edgier than Sonic, but, like, not by much. And then comes around to like, just being a good part of the story.
Yeah.
And never goes full Shadow.
Never goes full Shadow.
Maybe we need a Shadow.
No! No more.
I mean, the dictatorship of the proletariat is not going to slaughter those capitalists on its own.
Oh my goodness.
Really, do you think Bill Gates is just going to roll over and be like, yes, I'm giving away my billions of dollars, and not in the fake way where I continue to make billions of dollars on the billions of dollars I gave away?
No, he's going to go on his yacht to New Zealand, hang out with Gaben there, and I'm going to cry when I have to kill, you know, Gaben in Minecraft, and, you know.
That's the thing. Like, if there are still capitalists with capital out in the world, the proletariat, like, the dictatorship of the proletariat is not done.
Fair. That's true. Anyway, I think the whole point of this this segment is we need a Shadow the Hedgehog to carry out the dictatorship in Minecraft.
Well, we need a Shadow the Hedgehog to participate in the dictatorship of the proletariat. They should not be the ones unilaterally making decisions.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Because then he's just going to go buck wild. Like,
yes.
For real. And get all the chaos emeralds and then try to take over the world. You know, the usual.
Okay. So the 1935 to 1937 purges in USSR Russia is just Stalin trying to get the chaos emeralds?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, this is the lore I can get behind. This is the real theory.
This is the real theory. Okay, all right. That wraps up our reading of State and Revolution. Our next three books will be Rules for Radicals, Jesus and John Wayne, and Blood in My Eye. I will put links in the podcast description below, along with the Liberation School links. Remember, books are
good.
Actually.